Welcome to Articulate Warbling, hosted by Zach Ferguson, edited and produced at Badger's Drift Studio. If you enjoyed this podcast, please contact us at pgttcm.com and let us know. We would love to make more of this show for you. And here he is, Zach Ferguson with...
It's not a rant! It's an...
Articulate Warbling.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 7 of It's Not a Rant, It's Articulate Warbling with me, your host and warbler, Zach Ferguson. Today I shall be reviewing two novels, two very short novels, some could argue maybe novella length, but because they are released by the big, bold publishers, they are novels because they exceed a certain quota of numbers and page numbers and word count and all such and sundry. And there I go again, hyperbolically using that word, sundry. Oh, that's saying all such and sundry. But today I shall be reviewing My Sister the Serial Killer by Oyinkan Braithwaite. And then I shall also be reviewing Lanny by Max Porter. And alongside that, I may have a little special segment at the end that I want to title Glitter Freeze, talking about the recent controversy surrounding the use of a Gary Glitter rock song in the latest release from Warner Brothers and DC and Village Roadshow, Joker. And I hope that you will bear with me and take into consideration what I have to say, and that it's not political, it is just my opinion, and I think that everyone is kind of overreacting. Now, if you're with me for that, stay and hear for my justifications at the end of the show. But to begin with, I will give you the synopsis of our first review, which is My Sister the Serial Killer, again written by Oyinkan Braithwaite, and this is up for Women's Prize for Fiction 2019, shortlisted. And that's what automatically interested me, and I gravitated towards this because there's amazing, beautiful cover art. Also, a female writer and novelist, especially of African descent, and I really wanted to read more books by female authors, and seeing that it was shortlisted, there's that instantaneous, almost genetically DNA imbued expectation of, wow, it's up for a prize, it's shortlisted for a prize, wow, I need to read this. And it's not something to do with be part of the agenda or be part of the party, be part of the online masses. I was generally intrigued by this, so I'll read you the synopsis and then I'll get into my review. When Cora Day's dinner is interrupted one night by a distress call from her sister Eula, she knows what's expected of her: bleach, rubber gloves, nerves of steel, and a strong stomach. This will be the third boyfriend Ayula's dispatched in self-defense, and the third mess that her lethal little sibling has left Koroday to clear away. She should probably go to the police for the good of the menfolk of Nigeria, but she loves her sister, and as they say, family always comes first. Until, that is, Ayula starts dating a doctor at the hospital where Koroday works as a nurse. Koroday's long been in love with him, and isn't prepared to see him wind up with a knife in his back, but to save one would mean sacrificing the other. Taking wicked aim at male impropriety and celebrating the bright spirit of sisterhood, My Sister the Serial Killer is a murderously good novel of moral dilemmas, family and fatalities. And that is a good summary, all except do not be lured by Women's Prize for Fiction. I'm not going to get many people subscribing or agreeing with me. They may think that I'm anti-female, I'm a misogynist, I'm sexist, but this book does not deserve to be shortlisted for Women's Prize for Fiction. And here is why. It's fast-paced, it's witty, it's sharp, but there is no substance, there is no validation behind this getting such plaudits and probably selling millions upon millions. It's the same issue with all mainstream books at this moment in time. It's getting notified because of our current climate, because she is of African descent and female. I'm not taking or deriding that she is a good writer. She's great with dialogue. She's quippy. But I was anticipating something with a little bit more depth and flavour. The relationship between Ayula and Kororide is, yes, felt through dialogue, but you don't really go inside of them as characters. Although it is a first-person story, almost, and such, but it isn't, because it flips, and I don't know. It is done through first person, but you don't get into the head of the most interesting character, who is Ayula, who is the serial killer in question, who keeps fighting off, well, quotation marks, keeps it's all in self-defense, these murders, but is it really? We don't really get behind the machinations and the mental disintegrations and the fragility of her. She comes across as a character, Ayula, as if she enjoys this. And then there are some segmentations about their growing up in a privileged household, a father, there's some seedy doings, something to do with prostitution, underage sex and marriage. But by throwing that out there, that doesn't kind of validate or really give much substance or depth or room for us to discover why Ayula is the way that she is. You're kind of left grasping at straws, and then it's like a Greek tragedy. There's a lump sum, a paragraph, where it's so self-explanatory and so obvious. I wanted a little bit more, you know, puzzle, a little bit of fragmentary piecing together. I wanted it not to be a Greek chorus. I didn't want everything to be bloody highlighted for us. I wanted a little bit of mystique, a little bit of mystery, a little bit of depth, a little bit of emotion. Kororide's an interesting character, but there's not enough. There's such short chapters and such a short amount of space. I mean, the book is 226 pages long, and I still feel we don't know these sisters, unless there's an intended follow-up, which I cannot tell whether Yoink and Braithwaite was winning, but when I saw this prize for fiction shortlisted, the Woman's Prize, it made me question, is it just based upon our current climate because she is of African descent and because she is female, and we need to put this into a bundle and market it as the big thing? They should read this book, reread it, re-evaluate it, and realise it's not a book that's really worthy of being shortlisted for anything. It's fast, it's vapid, it's got great dialogue, but it's missing something, a vital ingredient. It feels like, and this may be a biased opinion, that they've marketed it and they're using current climates, current woke culture to push books out of this calibre, not because of the quality of the writing, but because of someone's ethnicity, their sexual identity, their background. And it's kind of frustrating for me. I've read it twice now, and I'm not going to deny it, it's a very fun, vapid, funny, humorous book, but being shortlisted for a Women's Prize for literature, it just has me surmising. People of equality like Nicola Barker, Margaret Atwood, so many other female authors out there writing, but this seems to be an almost forced political movement within the hierarchies of the publication and the awards strata and tier and tableau of working. But I feel the book is lacking substance. I think we need a little bit more. And, you know, although it's first-person perspective and description of her sister, Kororide's sister, Ayula, it's from her sister's subjective experience, we need a little bit of objective. Also, maybe defer and then place ourselves within Ayula's first-person perspective. Or maybe it may have been a little bit more enabled to be broadened if it was written in third person. I'm not putting this book down and saying it doesn't deserve to be shortlisted because it's a woman and because of her ethnicity. I just feel there's an agenda and a disingenuous factor behind this. I would read this book, and I read this very quickly, and it's very rare. If I read a book very quickly, I either really don't enjoy it, or I enjoy it enough to accept that, yeah, it's good, it passed the time, or I can read it really quickly like I did with Max Porter's Lanny and be completely transported and still questioning the reading experience. My Sister the Serial Killer is quite self-explanatory, as is with all motivations, actions. There's no depth, there's no sidling avenues, there's no almost foreshadowing, no red herrings, there's no twists, there's no turns. It's pretty much a sister cleaning up a mess. She loves a doctor, sister starts dating him. You know inevitably what's going to happen. Is she going to clear up after her? But there's no dynamism, there's no strong structure, infrastructure. It's fairly simplistic. And for its simplicity, it just leaves you feeling empty. It's lacking. It's a 3-star read, don't get me wrong. 3 stars out of 5. It's enjoyable, it's entertaining, it passes the time. It's something you'd read at the beach. But the type of focus and the almost imbuement that the media and the critics are ushering onto it and all these various people, it's kind of building up Oyinka and Braithwaite. And then a lot of people come to this book and go, one minute, this book doesn't talk on these issues, that issues. And this is the same thing with critique and certain movements. It's all agenda-based. And they've marketed it and pushed this out so fucking wonderfully and beautifully that they've imbued it with the sensibility that they believe that a book should inhabit and exhibit, whereas this book doesn't for me. It just doesn't inhabit these movements. It doesn't inhabit this good, genuine need to thrust female writers out there because they're good writers. It feels like a book that's been accepted and plaudited purely based upon personal imbuements and personal subjective experiences, and thus trying to make it objective through the machinations of media, marketing, social media. And I feel the book lacks for that. It's got a stamp of Prize of Fiction for female writers, the Women's Prize, but it's not validated because the book's not perfect and it doesn't offer anything but a quick, sharp read.
Hey everyone, welcome back. This is me, D.V. Spitzer, the editor and producer of Articulate Warbling with Zach Ferguson. Just wanted to let you know that we're hoping to make this a full-time series and not just a backdoor pilot. So if you would like to help sponsor the show, or if you have anything that you'd be like wanting to donate to help the show keep going, let us know. PGTTCM.com. And where you can reach Zach is in the show notes, and also where you can buy his many books, Zach Ferguson, and you can check him out, of course, on Amazon.com, where he's got all kinds of wonderful books, from Dimension Horse to What Mr. Wants, Mr. Gets.
I just felt personally that this book had been lauded as something. I was interested in having a different culture, a different perspective, someone who'd been raised in Africa, someone with a different cultural sensibility, upbringing, and a little bit of that is sprinkled throughout, but this book has been lauded as the next big thing, and I really don't say, I think it feels like a Paula Hawkins book. I think that's her name, who did The Girl on the Train. It's a movement. It's like that big thing, only as much as how far the marketing stretches and how far so many people will keep with it and be interested in it. I do think Oyinkan has a great prosaic, fast-paced, snappy, sharp, and yes, personal thing, but I felt it lacked a lot within the crime genre, what you expect from the crime genre, from a serial killer novel. I mean, it's in the title, My Sister the Serial Killer, but it's not harsh enough, it's not brash enough, it's not brave enough. And I felt that with her cultural upbringing, her background, her experiences, as I've listened to loads of interviews, and she's a deeply intriguing, very, very, very warm, forthcoming, lovely lady, it seems. But I just felt that she was kind of oppressing herself. She was kind of mediating herself, and I felt that she could have a balls to the wall type novel. So My Sister the Serial Killer, 3 stars. It is a recommended read. I'm just very perplexed behind the Women's Prize for Fiction, because there's so many novels out there that I've read by women that have never been shortlisted, hasn't even been given the benefit of the doubt. So many women who are within the small indie community who deserve that stamp, who deserve that sale, who deserve that exposure and the new leap in their writing career. I'm not saying that Oyinka and Braithwaite doesn't deserve this. I'm very glad that she is getting that exposure. And who knows, maybe her next book could be that something that I felt this is lacking. Maybe this was a book that just needed to get her out there, get her out into the open, so she felt secure enough and that she had a fan base enough that she could spread her wings and do something that I feel she strives to achieve within My Sister the Serial Killer. But I'll end this review with, it is a recommended read. But don't gravitate towards this because you anticipate a certain caliber, because it's shortlisted for a certain prize, because it does dampen your experiences and it may worsen the experience. You may read it and go, what the fuck, why is this getting notarized for being shortlisted? Because it's very hard for those preconceptions and that prejudgment and that predetermined thing and expectation not to take over, even as much as you can in hindsight afford yourself that space to go, I shouldn't really have imbued it with that type of expectation and caliber of want. And you know, but I still recommend it. It's a 3-star read. I just think that it's been mismarketed and imbued with a lot of things that the book does not capture for me personally. Now, on to my next review, which is for Max Porter's Lanny. And Max Porter came on the scene with a book called Grief is the Thing with Feathers. And this young man, oh, well, just, I just don't know how best to describe it. It's special. It's personal. It's special. It's different. And I'm going to read the synopsis and a little snippet. In came the sound of a song, warm on his creaturely breath. My singing child, bringing me gifts. A second or two before I realise it's not him. Lanny? Not far from London, there is a village. This village belongs to the people who live in it and to those who lived in it hundreds of years ago. It belongs to England's mysterious past and its confounding present. It belongs to Mad Pete, the grizzled artist, to ancient Peggy, gossiping at her gate, to families dead for generations, and to those who have only recently moved here. But it also belongs to dead Papa Toothwort, who has woken from his slumber in the woods. Dead Papa Toothwort, who is listening to them all. Chimerical, audacious, strange and wonderful, a song to difference and imagination, to friendship, youth and love. Lanny is the globally anticipated new novel from Max Porter. And this is my first Max Porter novel. I have yet to read his debut. But from what I got from Lanny, this is a sure sign that this young man, this writer, knows what he wants to convey. It's atmospheric. Also, the use of format, the spiral, the tendrils, the blurred text. This book is metatextual. It is experimental in its use of typography, formation. It's blurred between the lines, and it really ties in with the character of Dead Papa Toothwort, who plagues this book in the textual form. He's blurring, he's fogged, he's out of thing. It's hard to see where it's arcing and curving, where that spiral is going to lead with the words. He's in and out of reality and very much in and out of this book. He plagues this book, he plagues the existence. It's a very personal it's a very personal thing that you can feel from this. It's a very personal book about family relations and alienation that you find within a close-knit community, about prejudgment, judgment upon youth and relationships and the symbiosis of creative minds, youthful minds. The book, for me, is just so beautiful. It's so perfectly captured. It's sharp. It's abrupt. It's whimsical. It's almost pathologically beautiful in its grotesqueries. There's a lot of connotation, a lot of seedy connotation of rape, abuse, but based upon and subjugated upon close, quaint rumour mill villages that this whole story is set upon. It's about a young boy who goes missing eventually, and recently he'd made a very strong bond with a artist, having the furor of the village and the he said she said, the grapevine, the spreading of rumours. As the rumours spread, the power of Toothwort almost spreads, and it's Lanny in question. The book is gorgeous to hold, to feel, the embossed cover, that almost musky feel to the cover wrap, the design. Max Porter is poetical, he is passionate, he is refined in his subtlety of transgressiveness. And I think that's a real powerful tour de force. It veers on that edge of it could be controversial, but then he reverts back. There's a subtle art to Max Porter's words. It's emotive, it's felt, but in its sparsity and its abbreviated form, in its sharp chapters, its vignettes, its episodic almost facades, it's fantastical, it's a delve into the minds of worried parents, into the it accesses aspects of depression, oppression, expectation, familial ties, father and son's bond, and within such a short amount of space and time. This is 210 pages, but it has the depth and the felt emotion that I felt My Sister the Serial Killer lacked. It feels like something so heavy and leaden that you could garner from a 600-page novel, but such so short and compact and so subtle and so defined and so eloquent and so rapidly read, and it just makes you want to reread certain passages, certain pages. You want to go back. It's not a puzzle piece. It's so evidential and out there, but subtle and mystique and musty. It's reading it, you just feel the village, you feel the freshness, but once those dark clouds cluster and oppress and veer over you, you can feel the musk, the smog, the quagmire, how easily a seasonal rain can turn a quaint little beatific paisley green acred village into something quite oppressive, dark, brooding, something that you could herald back into the old witch days. It's such a lovely book, whilst also being heavily it's got heavy connotations and almost subliminal messages of day-to-day life, especially as parents would feel and people part of a community would feel. There's a lot about alienation, about class, about that warfare amongst people, not just politically, but within the substructured political climates that you find within very quaint, contained, interpersonal places. And that you do find, even if you moved onto a council block or a recent street, or to a recent town street. Lanny is a beautifully written, visualised, constructed, dense novel, and I give Lanny 5 stars out of 5. I cannot recommend this read enough. It is sensational, and to go on, I just feel I'd ruin the experience. Just go with it. It's like one of those songs. It's smooth, it's coercive, that you've got the beat, you've got the thrum, even the words kind of disappear. It's an atmosphere, it's an emotion, it's a tangibility, it's intertextual, and then the words come out of that fugue state that it's imbued you, and then you find the words again, and then it's just so strident and reinforced and meaningful and felt. And that's the potency and poignancy and power that Max Porter's prose has. It imbues you with this fantastical dislocation while still rooted in something familiar. Human emotions become alien. They become so ever so relatable that you feel the strife. It's a book that is subliminally built upon connotations and atmosphere, but then the words reinforce it, and then they come out and they kind of concrete themselves and like a neon light in the dark. Now, on to Glitterfree's segment. There's been a real recent controversy surrounding the Joker and a certain use of a piece of music by Gary Glitter, a notorious disgusting human being, a convicted paedophile, multiple charges, but still sees the light of day. But a lot of people have targeted the filmmakers and the decisions to use a piece of art. I believe that a piece of art is separate from the artist. It always will be. And there has been news reports and information that no royalties or any financial gain will be imbued or given over to Gary Glitter in question. The piece of music, optionally, I don't believe it was chosen for controversy's sake or taboo nature. I think that the piece of music just fit the sequence that of which the song is attributed to. I don't know Gary Glitter's back catalogue. I didn't even know that was a song by Gary Glitter until the controversy came about, and not many people do. And it's not just to do with people within the verse of the filmmaking world. There's a lot of controversy surrounding the contemplations of such a big world, nationwide company. They would know that this was it. I don't think it was an obvious decision for Todd Phillips to push this song out to make a great overall point. I just think the music worked beautifully for the sequence. And art and artist is always separate. A lot of work goes into a piece of music, like any piece of art, separate. And it goes back to that Kevin Spacey question. Should we write him out of history? Should we wipe out this amazing music that's meant something to us at some point in our lives? That piece of music personifies the era it's set in and the mood and the emotions of the character. So overall, I think that people are taking the woke culture and they are just overly politicising it and overly causing a stir. They want to be seen to be making big, bold statements over something that is just a use of music. If it was a different scenario where Gary Glitter was heavily involved and they signed off with his permission, you might question the producers or the music producers or the selectors and all such, and music editors, their decisions and their motions and actions to gain said music. But this music is owned by a whole different studio, not in Glitter's name, all right. And I just believe that there's controversy for the sake of controversy. Once all of the furor and craziness surrounding the big hard topic of does this movie glamorise violence, does it encourage incel behaviour, does it make the Joker character an aspirational figure, it makes him a pathetic and empathetic and a relatable character, but I don't see any form of encouragement. It's a piece of story, it's telling, and that's what art is for, to hold up a mirror image, to interpret what is going on societally. And if that music was used controversially and taboo-like, as Todd Phillips is notorious within his comedy things, being quite risque, good for him if that was the case. Also, because transgressively, that's what transgressive art does. It's to push you. If it was a case of they were playing a Gary Glitter scene, subjugated and surrounded by around a character that's a paedophile, that would be a completely different thing. But it's not. It's just a piece of music that works for that. And there's been arguments on various podcasts and media outlets and articles and newspapers saying there's so many different pieces of music that will work for a certain sequence. Yes, that's true. And in a lot of times it isn't. As someone who makes movies himself, short films, not of any decent calibre, there's certain music that just needs to be. Be it Michael Jackson's Thriller. And, you know, there's evidence out there that Gary Glitter was a paedophile, but this is not an encouragement of his behaviours. It's just using a piece of art that he had created in his stages of being an artist and one that people appreciated, and as much as people may want to stretch out and distance themselves, did love. So I just want to say, woke culture is getting so overly politicised, so overly sensitive, there's a danger where every decision every creative person makes is held up to be subjugated to a jury, a trial. It's a lynch mob mentality, and I think that the Glitter Freeze scenario is get over yourselves. The piece of music works for that sequence. I don't think there was no horrible malintent, and if it was pushed to be controversial and a bit taboo, that's the nature of the art and the artist. The Joker is a transgressive, almost full punch in the face type affair. If it adds something to it aura wise and it is a bit risque and it's a bit treading that fine line, but I don't think it's malintended. So that is episode 7 done for today. I hope you join me after that for episode 8, where it will be an hour special where I will be warbling on, articulately warbling, about the Human Centipede trilogy. Something that means a lot to me and I think has been misappropriated culturally, and they're not as appreciated or admired for the pieces of cinematic art that they are. So please join me for episode 8, where I'll do an almost retrospective on the Human Centipede trilogy by Tom Six. Again, thank you for joining me. Hit that subscribe button. Please leave a review. Please get hold of me. My books are available on Amazon to purchase. Also, please support The People's Guide to Cthulhu Mythos and Clockwork Tales. And follow DB Spitzer, my great producer. And I just hope you have a great evening, morning, or whatever time in the cosmos that you are. Thank you.
Written by Zach Ferguson. Produced and edited by D.B. Spitzer. Recorded at Badger Strip Studios in glorious Portland, Oregon. Zach's part is, of course, recorded in Brighton, England. Want to help the show? Go to pgttcm.com. Check out what we've got. Go to Zach's shop in the show notes. Go to Zach's Instagram in the show notes. Find out how to help him out. And, of course, Ashton Manor, Darkest Child by Kevin MacLeod.